Are listening to Expanding Horizons, the podcast of the Unitarian Church of South Australia, a home of progressive spirituality and free religious thought and action since 1854. Views expressed in these podcasts are those of the speaker and are not intended to represent the position of the church itself or of the worldwide Unitarian Universalist movement. For more information, visit unitariansa.org.au.
So Schadenfreude, The Joy of Another's Misfortune by Tiffany Watt Smith. In historical portraits, people beaming with joy look very different to those slyly gloating over another's bad luck. However, in a laboratory in Würzburg in Germany in 2015, 32 football fans agreed to have electromyography pads attached to their faces, which would measure their smiles and frowns while watching TV clips of successful and unsuccessful football penalties by the German team and by their arch rivals, the Dutch. The psychologists found that when the Dutch missed a goal, the German fans' smiles were broader than when the German team scored a goal themselves. The smiles of Schadenfreude and joy are indistinguishable except in one crucial respect. We smile more with the failures of our enemies than at our own success. Make no mistake, over time and in different places, when it comes to making ourselves happy, we humans have long relied on the humiliation and failures of other people. There never has been a word for these grubby delights in English. In the 1500s, someone attempted to introduce epicaricacy from the ancient Greek, but it didn't catch on. In 1640, Thomas Hobbes wrote a list of human passions and concluded it with a handful of obscure feelings which want names. What strange combination of joy and pity, he wrote, make people content to be spectators of the misery of their friends. Hobbes' mysterious and terrible passion remained without a name in the English language at least. In 1926, a journalist in The Spectator asserted that there is no English word for Schadenfreude because there is no such feeling here. He was wrong, of course.
In a Cherokee wisdom tale, an elder is teaching his grandchildren about life, and he says to them, "A terrible fight is going on between two wolves, and they're inside me. And one wolf represents anger, envy, greed, lies, pride, ego. And the other wolf stands for joy, peace, love, generosity, truth, faith. Now that same fight is going on inside you and inside every other person too." The children are quiet for a bit, and then one of them asks his grandfather earnestly, "Which wolf will win?" And the elder replies, "The one you feed." Now that story encapsulates our misgivings about Schadenfreude, the joy in the misfortunes of others. Which wolf are we feeding in the doctor's surgery or at the dentist's when we browse the celebrity gossip magazines? The cellulite, the weight gain, the weight loss, the bikinis riding up the bum cheek, luxury mansions, tragic breakups. Well, it's obvious, isn't it? We feed envy when we read about celebrities, and we feed malice when we detail how their spouses cheat on them and their children take to drugs. In everyday life, if your cousin takes his kids on a ridiculously, horrendously expensive holiday to Disneyland or skiing in Austria, and you find out from the Facebook feed that the weather's awful, and you feel this wonderful warm satisfaction rising from... Does that reflect well on you? Do you just enjoy your little gloat in private? Then if your three-year-old prances around with the last Tim Tam going, nya, 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 and then the dog snatches it out of her hand, Do you go into instant sympathy mode, or do you permit yourself a bit of a giggle before soothing the outrage? Your Oscar loves Bickies. Do you think he meant... Do you think it was for him? And this brings me to the thought that some behaviours resulting in misfortune are reprehensible. The dog and the biscuit aren't what I have in mind. It's a step or two further. Showed that earlier. That's wonderful, isn't it? Wiley, all our joy from Wiley Coyote is when the anvil lands on him and that sort of thing. Anyway, getting on to more serious reprehensible behaviours. In 2015, US pastor Tony Perkins said the floods were sent by God to punish abortion and gay marriage. Well, when his house was flooded and he had to escape in a canoe, even the usually impartial BBC relished the story and posted aerial pictures of swirling floodwaters around his house next to his controversial "God is trying to send us a message" interview. Now that's the sort of schadenfreude that feels somehow acceptable, rather more so than the sort felt by smokers when a lung cancer victim who's a non-smoker cops it, or the not-so-secret satisfaction felt by couch potatoes when a jogger has a heart attack at 46. It's easier to be open about your feelings if the victim is remote from you personally. For example, in the days of good Queen Victoria, Sir William Gill, a water drinker and vegetarian, well, almost, went around the country giving lectures about how his lifestyle would protect him against disease. Well, in 1887, it emerged that he was seriously ill. And those who advocated a fuller diet and freer living had a field day. So much so that two British newspapers gleefully reported there was a certain amount of what the Germans call schadenfreude. Although schadenfreude is usually a bit more furtive. Outbursts of merriment at the catastrophes of another are generally a sign of villainy. Shylock in The Merchant of Venice can hardly contain himself when he learns that his rival Antonio has lost a cargo ship at sea. I thank God. It's true. Good news. Well, we may well worry about looking malicious. And worse, our schadenfreude can expose our other flaws as well. Pettiness, envy, feelings of inadequacy. There are, of course, limits to the concept of schadenfreude. Firstly, it's a spectator sport, an opportunistic pleasure felt when we stumble across another's misfortune, which we have not caused ourselves. The Hollywood villain gloating when his victim falls for his dastardly plot is experiencing sadistic pleasure. He's not experiencing schadenfreude. By contrast, the sidekick who gloats when the villain trips and falls into his own trap is enjoying schadenfreude. Another point is there are limits. Even Homer Simpson feels morally awkward when his daydream of the demise of his neighbour, Nell Flanders, goes too far. Now, she's infuriatingly perfect and she opens a shop called Leftorium. Homer fantasises firstly that the business will fail. Then he fantasises that the bailiffs will move in. And finally, he pictures Nell's children weeping at the graveside. And he stops himself. "Too far," he says, and he rewinds to the business collapse. As you might expect, Friedrich Nietzsche had a bit to say on the subject of schadenfreude. He called it the revenge of the omnipotent. Maybe this is why the epic fail videos and bloopers are so popular on the internet. How else do we explain the appeal of the humiliation of TV talent show contestants or would-be chefs? The names of political resignation speeches or joy of joy, the glee when the teacher farts. Definitely the joy of the powerless. Arthur Schopenhauer called schadenfreude an infallible sign of a thoroughly bad character and profound moral worthlessness, the very worst trait in human nature. And anyone caught suffering, enjoying the suffering of others, should be shunned from human society. Well, it's come time to reveal my hand. I think Schopenhauer was wrong. I'm rather more on the side of Mr. Bennett in Pride and Prejudice, who opines that, for what do we live but to make sport for our neighbours and laugh at them in our turn? It's not that I'm in denial about the potential for corruption of the spirit if you dwell and wallow in the misfortunes of others. Rather, I think Schadenfreude is unavoidable and not necessarily all bad. For starters, Schadenfreude taps into things that really matter to us. Our instinct for fairness. Our hatred of hypocrisy. Remember the story about the US pastor. Our love of seeing an opportunity to succeed when somebody else drops the ball, so to speak. Our itch to measure up. Our need to make sense of our choices when we fall short. And our love of the bonds created by laughter. There is no moral harm in enjoying a synchronized swimming stuff-up when the swivel the wrong way has to be corrected with the swivel the right way, hoping nobody will notice. Everybody notices. When Kim Kardashian swanned around Paris flashing a ginormous diamond ring, which was later nicked, there were benefits for those who sniggered. It's a reminder that wealth doesn't bring security or immunity from being laughed at, that rich people can be careless or silly. Let's imagine a drop-dead, gorgeous, close friend gets dumped. You may feel a fleeting moment of joy, and it's a reminder that anyone can suffer in a relationship, that looks aren't everything. Sigmund Freud can be relied upon to put a nasty spin on almost anything, and he seized on the fact that babies and toddlers will laugh if mum or dad falls over. Proof they don't really have a sense of humour, thought Freud in The Joke and Its Relation to the Unconscious. He opined that instead children have a taste for gloating and triumph. They feel superior. You fell over and I didn't. Well, there is an alternative explanation. Babies can be quite upset when they see little children fall. They're capable of empathy at an incredibly early age, but they're also capable of prediction. Surprises capture their attention and they laugh. That's why the game of peekaboo always works. It's not that they think it's funny if mum or dad falls. It's so unexpected. The laughter is a sign of seeing the world afresh, of being surprised. And adults too are susceptible to surprises. I can recall stalking feeding gangangs in the Bogong High Plains. There was a fence between me and a significant drop. My feet whizzed out from under me and I was suspended by the armpits on the top wire of the fence, unable to use my hands because they were clutching my precious Canon SLR camera. And I had two companions. Did they help? No, they were helpless, practically wetting themselves amid gales of laughter, and they dined out on the story for years. The popularity of funniest home videos and the little videos online also revolves around accidents. You know, like man jumps into frozen pool. If you can picture a muscled 20-year-old in black Speedos psyching himself to jump off a jetty at the edge of a lake, he does a little gangster rap. He runs, he jumps, but he doesn't land in the water. He lands on hard, thick ice and skates on his backside. Now, there are 4 million hits on that video. Check it out. But how unfunny that is if we perceive there's injury or if we think it's too set up. We require surprise and authenticity, not just a clever, albeit pointless, stunt. Schadenfreude can give us insight into ourselves. It's one thing to relish the boss's letterhead, head of pubic services, on a letter going out to all employees. It's another to feel a flash of warmth when someone you like misses out on a promotion or gets made redundant. It's a signal that you're envious, or you have a need to feel superior, or you have a need to feel luckier. It's something to work on, not necessarily something to self-flagellate over. You take another look at yourself. As a teacher in my 20s, I had a moment of truth brought about by a flash of Schadenfreude. I was teaching year threes. One of the little boys had experienced a tragedy the year before he was in my class. His father was crushed to death by a shifting load of newspapers that he was driving to Broken Hill. He'd braked to avoid a kangaroo. Well, this kid had a tubby little mother, very buxom, maybe 5 feet tall, and an older sister. And one day I had the kids cutting pictures out of magazines, foodstuffs and so on. Unknown to me, in the middle of the stack was one of the then newer celebrity gossip magazines, full of pictures of women displaying a lot of cleavage and pouting at the camera. Well, this little lad went for them with a pair of scissors, making a big mess and creating gales of laughter from other kids, and they were egging him on. I had words and everybody helped tidy up, because I figured, you know, it was a group offence, really. Well, one of the little girls reported it to her mother, who took a very dim view of this threatening misogyny and claimed her daughter and the other girls had been intimidated by this dreadful, patriarchal, violent behaviour. And she was very unimpressed by my manifestly, and I quote, manifestly inadequate response, and critical that the boy, age 7, hadn't been suspended. Nothing funny so far. But a week later, I discovered a little stash of hate notes, some targeting the boy, most of them vilifying other girls. I had Mum in. The child, of course, denied that they were hers. Mum said I had no reason to suspect her. I pointed out the distinctive G, you know, the Times New Roman sort instead of the standard infant print one, Greek E's, little dots, instead of little dots above their eyes, there were circles. And then the child turned on me and said, look, she thinks it's funny. She smiled. I saw me. She just wants me in trouble. Well, I wasn't smiling, but I had, fleetingly, and I'd been sprung, not quite being the grown-up. Being a little too transparently proud of my Sherlockian prowess with the handwriting. Well, not really. I was actually pleased I'd caught the little monster out. But then she caught me out. So my moment of Schadenfreude turned rapidly into a moment of Schaden without the Freude. I certainly had to reflect on how emotionally sophisticated 7-year-old girls were. She saw right through me. I had to think about whether I'd read the incident correctly. I had just seen a little boy who'd lost the male influence in his family and was surrounded by feminine stuff, some of which he could not handle, like tits. I really hadn't considered it from the girl's point of view. They appeared to be enjoying egging him on, so he'd really cop it big time. But was that a misapprehension? Were they concealing fear at threatening behaviour? He was attacking the magazine, not any other child, but it was a picture of a woman being stabbed with the scissors. So that's got implications. He came to order quick smart with my, what on earth are you doing, and just looked dreadfully shamefaced. The kids helped clean up quietly, but there were a few looks exchanged. So what did I do next? Nothing. I let sleeping dogs lie. It took me quite a while to process that little, I suppose you'd call it moral failure. But afterwards, I was very careful to go through stacks of donated magazines to exclude raunchy photos. I monitored myself for gotcha attitudes, and I questioned myself about being partial. It's easy to sympathise with one child's difficulties and stereotype another as a bully, or what my grandmother would call a piece of work. In the years that followed, I developed techniques for debriefing groups of children after incidents in which their collective judgment was pretty ordinary. So I guess what I'm saying is that Schadenfreude can help direct your moral compass. It might be negative, mean-spirited, self-defeating emotion, but it can be quite useful too. Schadenfreude can tell you things you don't want to know. It happens for a reason. If we ask what prompted it, we may well be able to name excruciating feelings underlying it, like envy or inadequacy, insecurity, anger, betrayal even. If you get called out on it, you may or may not want to own up, admit you're embarrassed and have a laugh or a cry, but it doesn't define us. After all, we can experience very genuine feelings of concern and sympathy, a surge of compassion, as well as a sudden desire to laugh. Truth is more interesting than unadulterated moral rigidity, and we should cherish our capacity for emotional flexibility. We cope if we can laugh at ourselves and others. We must not let it define ourselves. One shiver of pleasure doesn't actually wipe out compassion. In a world that admires success and winning and eliminating the unsuccessful, we need to be reminded that no one is perfect. Schadenfreude may be a flaw, but we need it. It may one day be your salvation. As we leave this safe refuge, this peaceful sanctuary, which protects our loving hearts from the storms of the wide world, may we take with us something of the stillness, something of the silence, and something of the joy within. Those words were from Stephanie Cage.
Well, we hope you enjoyed this Expanding Horizons podcast. These podcasts are the intellectual property of the presenter. They can be used only with the express permission and appropriate acknowledgement of the presenter and the podcast used in its entirety. This permission can be obtained by emailing unitarianSA@bigpond.com. Please feel free to leave a comment or visit us on Facebook or Twitter by searching SA Unitarians.